The VGRT Gaming Podcast, Episode 518, recorded on October 22nd, 2018.
Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 351st episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
And I'm no longer in the bathroom.
Yay!
So, yeah, last week the computer thought I wanted to record from my webcam mic instead of the headset that I usually wear, which not only is close to my voice, but it has a nice little foam so that, you know, it doesn't catch with wind or echoes or anything like that. So hopefully this will be listenable.
Okay. That's good.
I think many people thought I took up a new job as a tidy wall man. So we're going to get into what have you been playing, and I will start first. Oh, by the way, we do have a gaming flashback, which I forgot to update in the notes. But I've been playing for the past 30 minutes, Soul Calibur 6.
So how is that? You said Geralt is in it.
Yes, he is. And he does have some flashy attacks. Now, I haven't gone into using those characters because I'm going with what's basically a story mode in which you create your own character and you give him a look and you give him equipment. And I chose the one which has a sword and shield. And without realizing it, yeah, that's Sophitia. Mm-hmm. that's her stuff. So I'm doing the same, jump on someone's shoulders and snap their neck with my thighs attack.
Kneeing balls to hit left and right.
So one of the nice things is that when you play the story mode, it's not called the story mode, it's called something else. I forgot what it's called.
Campaign.
Libra of Soul.
Yeah. So it actually gives you an option to do a tutorial with one of the fighters. And, you know, it's a lot better than what they do in Injustice 2. Not to mention, it's both simplified and made more complicated at the same time. If you want to counter, you just do left button, but you have to do it at the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and all that stuff. There's some stuff that's sort of like Injustice 2, in which they have the special attacks, in which you do something that's unique to your character that just, you know, goes wild. I haven't actually started fighting anyone yet. I've just been doing the... I've just been doing the tutorial, and that'll be it. So I've just been doing the tutorial for now. I haven't even moved out of the world. I've just been, you know, I think I finished it. I'm on defense number 2, and I think that's it.
Hmm.
So other than that, I've been playing a lot of Letter Quest, which is a game that I played on the iPad. And I'm going to tell you something. I really love letter games because I know how to dominate them. I've already gotten a 10-letter word registered. And, you know, I'm just blowing through the single-player campaign, because each stage has 4 levels, 3 that increase in difficulty, and then the 4th one is an elite. So mm-hmm. I've only been doing the first ones. For the first few, I've gotten all 4 stars. And, you know, it's kind of addictive. Especially one of the things I really like is it gives you all the stats. Like, how many times you use the letter B, how many times you use the letter J, you know, the size of the words you do, the highest scoring words, you know, and all that stuff. Just a crap ton of stats, which I always like, especially when you're doing a word game. You seldom see that, in which you get to analyze all the stuff that you've been spelling.
Well, that's cool.
Word game, Scott?
I've only been playing Minecraft this past week.
Oh, I say, do you ever play word games?
Word games. Yeah, I've played Scrabble. I've played Word with Friends. Those are fun. And, yeah, sometimes you get good words, and sometimes it's a real struggle.
Oh.
You get, like, too many duplicates of single letters that just don't add up to a word sometimes.
That reminds me, I've also been playing a lot of Yahtzee with friends on my Android.
Is it any good?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's here's the thing. I had it on the iPad, but it was sort of boring. They've updated it a lot, so it's, like, really nice. You have all these tournaments, and you have tournaments. You have either tournaments against the computer in which you're trying to defeat these characters to earn their dice, and also against there's week-long tournaments against other players where you can win, you know, the in-game currency of dice, which you can pay for, of course, because it's free-to-play. And, you know, I find myself getting in the top 15 if, you know, because here's the thing, you spend dice to get dice, you know, like, if I see, well, if I play again, I could get 10 dice, so I'll spend 2 or 4 dice in the game just to, you know, because you can play over and over, just call, the first match is free, then you can add to your score by paying dice. So if you pay dice, you know, you get to play it again, get a higher score. So it's sort of like you're starting to think of math, you know. Well, if I play again, it costs 2 dice, but if I do it, I could get 5 more dice, so it's worth it. You know, in-game rerolls are dice too, so you have to be careful with that. So you can earn dice, but it's harder than just paying for them. I think I've paid twice for dice, but only $3 each time.
Nice. Nice with the dice.
Yeah, it also rewards you for having rivalries, you know, people that you play over and over and over again. So, Scott and TJ, you got to start playing me so that, you know, you can have a rivalry with me. I think I'm almost at rivalry level 5 with one random person, but now he's my best friend because just from playing dice, I never spoke a word to him, but now he's my best friend.
I've never played Yahtzee, so I don't know how to play that.
Oh, it's just rolling 5 dice, basically poker dice. You know, get ones, twos, three, all 5. If you get all 5 of one number, it's Yahtzee. That's 50 points. One of the nice things is if you get Yahtzee again, you can use it on another category, which will add 50 points to whatever you made there. So if, like, you get Yahtzee and you get 5 threes, well, you can put it in the threes. You get 15 plus 50.
That does sound good.
How could you not know Yahtzee? It's one of the oldest Parker Brothers games.
I said I never played it. I didn't say I didn't know it. I just never played it.
Oh, okay. Do you play word games at all, TJ?
I haven't played anything like that in a while. Like, I used to play things like Words of Friends and, like, Boggle back in the day, but I haven't really gotten back into them in a long time.
There is another game which is on iPad, which I can't do because I don't have an iPad right now. It's about you being an author, and you make words, and you get money for those words, and you can buy books with them. I forgot the name of it. It's based on a card game, and the card game is like $50.
Usually I was playing Stratego and chess back in the day.
Yeah. The name of the game is Paperback. Yeah, that's a neat game to play.
Stratego was good. I love that one.
And now it's fun.
Yeah, well, you know, I knew how to get the bombs with my miner. You know, it was always nice to say, oh, it was a bomb. Oh, guess what? I got it with my miner, so screw you. Wah, wah. Anyways, what have you been playing, TJ?
Oh, I've been going full throttle on BlazBlue Cross Tag because I am traveling the country to compete. I'm going to Canada this coming
week.
Good
luck. That's awesome.
Be sure to get back some maple syrup.
So, EGLX starts on Wednesday, and at EGLX, which is hosted by Enthusiast Gaming.
You know, Canada's a very big place. Where in Canada?
Toronto.
Okay, the second city.
Yep. There is the Canada Cup there, which is a huge fighting game tournament. Some of the Street Fighter V Pro Tour is there. The Tekken World Tour is there. The Dragon Ball FighterZ World Tour is there. And, of course, they have BlazBlue Cross Tag.
Did you
so
think you up on Dragon Ball Z?
I did. I couldn't. It wasn't diverse enough in the characters for me to want to continue with it. And then BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle came out, and it fixed all of that problem for me. And
you
so that's
one Arc Systems game for another.
Pretty much. I feel like I enjoy BlazBlue Cross Tag that much more.
How many characters?
Cross Tag or DBZ?
Comparatively with DBZ.
Oh my god! Like, there's at least 10 characters per brand. 4 characters in Ruby Rose. There's probably close to over 40 characters in BlazBlue Cross Tag Battle.
I'm trying to think, how many characters does Injustice? I think Injustice has like 33 characters, something like that.
Because there's got to be at least like 15 to 20 BlazBlue characters at this point, and then there's 10 Persona characters, 10 Under Night and Birth characters, and 4 Ruby Rose characters. So there's a lot of things you can do with that game, and I'm sticking with my regular team, but I've learned some new things with them, and very specifically against certain compositions that beat me last time I competed. So I feel stronger for this one.
I've been also trying to play Mass Effect Andromeda again, trying not to get bored. The problem with the main character is he has almost no agency in the game. You know, Commander Shepard did stuff. This one just reacts to stuff. And it's just like, no, I want you to be more, you know, stop saying, oh, what was me? I'm the Pathfinder. My dad was a great Pathfinder. I'm going to try it. No, Shepard never thought like that. I mean, he wanted to make sure that, you know, oh, God, I can't believe I forgot his name. You know, his old CO liked him, you know, at least died with him in Mass Effect 3. Anderson, right, Captain Anderson. I mean, he wanted to make sure that Captain Anderson thought, you know, well, he didn't have to, because Captain Anderson always thought highly of him. But, you know, it's like Commander Shepard at least went out and did stuff. Here, he's like, I'm reacting to stuff, and everybody doesn't like me.
Hmm.
I just want a structured story, damn it.
But you're not going to get it out of that one. But yeah, I'm feeling good going into this weekend. I'm currently sitting at the top 200 ranked in the world.
Yay.
So really, it's just a matter of who I go up against and basically the moments as they pass, and if I can stick with it and keep it together and overcome opponents.
Well, share your prize money with us if you win.
It's going to be a good time, though. I've never been to Canada. I've actually never been out of the country before, so that's going to be an experience.
You know, by the way, you know, the Mega Millions is well over $1 billion now. It was $1 billion last drawing.
I don't put money into worthless causes.
So you think that just not putting down $2 with the possibility of getting $1.5 billion...
I'm not a miser, but that's $2 that is not going to do anything
for
me. That's
$2
besides.
You could use to buy a bag of chips.
I mean, yeah.
It's not even the cost of a friggin' beer, and I'm pretty sure you're going to be enjoying a lot of strange brew up there.
Do you know how much $2 is in Canada? It's like $3. So
where's U.S. money, not Canadian money.
But yeah, I don't play the lottery. I had a spur of the moment once where I bought like $70 worth of lottery tickets
I don't do that.
This was a long time ago, and like I just sat in my car scratching them off for about 2 hours, and then after I was done, I was like, and I took them back in. I won $20. I bought $20 worth of more lottery tickets, and I took them out, and I followed this pattern up until I was out, and that took up about 2 hours of my life, and I was like, cool, got that out of my system.
Well,
I never need to do this again.
You to Vegas then, Jesus.
Well, like I said, I got that out of my system. I never need to do this again.
Because when I go to Vegas, I never leave with less than what I brought.
Yeah, I basically just slow played it when I went to Vegas. Free drinks and all.
Oh. Well, anyways, Scott, you said you were still playing Minecraft. Anything else? I mean, you said you're still. Wait, you said there was a patch for your Dragon Quest game. Not Dragon Quest.
Yeah, there was a patch. They what did they do? they fixed.
Wait, before you go on, it was Dragon Hunter.
No, Dragon's Quest 11.
No. I mean, there was a patch for a different game. The one that was sort of like Minecraft Story Mode.
Oh, I was talking about Dragon's Quest Builders 2 is coming out, yes. Well, at least they showed more details for that. They're doing these builder puzzles, and you can they vary from rebuilding certain things to trying to manipulate moving blocks. Just it looks like a whole bunch of different little things scattered around the world that you can find. And you have companions that go with you that can help you on missions and quests, help you gather stuff. So it looks like they're really adding more depth to the game.
That's good.
It's coming to December 20th for PS4 and Nintendo Switch in Japan.
I'll be getting that on PS4, yeah.
Sort of tells me it's going to be in America in 2019.
Yeah, so I'll leave that for Game of the Year for 2019.
Nice.
Anyways, we do have a gaming flashback, and we were going to do it last week, but there was just so much stuff to talk about. So instead, we're going to have TJ talk about it today.
Gaming flashback, Dead Space. Dead Space is a science fiction survival horror video game developed by EA Redwood Shores, subsequently known as Visceral Games, for Microsoft Windows, PlayStation 3, and Xbox 360. The game was released in October 2008. The game puts the player in control of an engineer named Isaac Clarke, who fights necromorphs, monstrous reanimated human corpses, aboard an interstellar mining ship, the USG Ishimura. The player controls Isaac Clarke, a ship systems engineer who must fight his way through a mining starship infested with an alien scourge. The crew has been slaughtered, and their corpses reanimated into creatures known as necromorphs. Various types of necromorphs appear throughout the game, each with different abilities requiring different tactics to defeat. The game is played from an over-the-shoulder third-person perspective. Dead Space does not use a traditional heads-up display. Instead, all of the information is relayed to the player via holographic projections from Isaac's resource integration gear or rig spacesuit, and the weapons themselves. In keeping with Isaac's profession as an engineer, the weapons in Dead Space are mostly improvised from mining tools, such as a plasma cutter for horizontal and vertical slicing, rotary saw, a hydrazine torch repurposed as a flamethrower, a high energy demolition beam, and a cannon that emits a powerful shockwave. Combat involves a mechanism called strategic dismemberment, in which players must cut off limbs or sections of the necromorphs to defeat them. For example, shooting most necromorphs in the head will have little effect. However, they can be stopped once the player removes its arms and legs. Depending on how they are wounded, necromorphs can adopt new stances and tactics, such as sprouting new limbs or giving birth to new enemies in the process. The success of Dead Space has led to additional games, films, and media and print media. In September 2009, Dead Space Extraction was released for the Wii, a prequel to Dead Space.
By the way, that was a rail shooter, and it actually is one of the better games for the Wii. It was basically using your Wiimote as a light gun.
Yeah, the Wiimote light gun games are actually really good. I like the Resident Evil ones a lot. Dead Space 2 was released on January 25th, 2011 for the Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and Windows, with Isaac reprising his role as the protagonist.
Yeah, and that was the game in which the very first thing you do is you're strapped to a chair and a medic gets attacked by a necromorph and turns into a necromorph right before your eyes, 2 inches away from your face.
Ah, it's hideous. It's like his face just like the skin on his face just opens up and he like screams at you all skull faced and horrible.
Yeah, it's not like it's ripping off the thing or anything. By the way, the opening to Dead Space, everybody remembers the Planet Cracker opening scene.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Dead Space for iOS was released on iTunes on January 14th, 2011, and takes place 3 years after the first Dead Space. It was later released on Android and BlackBerry, it was later released for Android and for BlackBerry tablet OS. The latest installment, Dead Space 3, was something we're not going to talk about, but it was released in February 2013.
We should talk about it, because here's the thing about all the Dead Space games. It was sort of like Resident Evil in that it was scary, then get less scary, and less scary, and less scary. So by the time Dead Space 3 came around, it was basically a shooting gallery, you know? And, the microtransactions in Dead Space 3 were nothing. I mean, it was sort of like, here, if you want, you know, but you didn't need it to even complete the game. It was sort of like almost unnecessary. Sort of like, hey, you have to pay for cheat codes now. That's all it was.
The real shame about Dead Space 3 was that Dead Space 1 was basically Resident Evil 1. Dead Space 2 was Resident Evil 2. It was better. And then Dead Space 3 was Resident Evil 5. Just complete, like, lose all the horror and jump headlong into action, which is,
Are you saying that Dead Space needs an episode in which you're fighting a little person in a Napoleon outfit? While you have to keep the president's daughter safe?
I think that that Dead Space 2 was basically Resident Evil 2 through 4.
Dead Space 1 also was pretty sad because it was all about his relationship with his wife. I mean, in the next two games, it sort of like became, whatever. But in the first game, it was really poignant.
Yes. And, I mean, like, I really enjoyed Dead Space 2 because Isaac Clarke didn't talk in the first game. His entire whole thing was grunting and yelling and screaming when he was getting hurt. And then, like, when you get to the twist in Dead Space, the first Dead Space, the most emotion that Isaac shows outside of screaming when he's being killed is just,
But that's the best part. All the many ways Isaac gets killed. I think it's in 2 that they really went for it. Like, are we going to make all these incredible ways that you're going to want to die just to see how he dies?
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's like Mortal Kombat type of deaths.
They went all out on the graphic gore.
The thing that attracted most people to the first game was that Isaac's outfit, which is basically an engineer's outfit, right? But it looked so badass.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then there's the fact that, like, we had never – Alien Isolation hadn't come out yet. We have never been giving a game like Dead Space where it was like – well, we've never been giving a triple A title like Dead Space where it was like a sort of alien space station, claustrophobic hallways, flickering lights. You listen for every sound and the monsters are just straight up stalking you and horrifying. And Dead Space came out in a time – where Resident Evil was leaning really hard into action and Silent Hill was absolutely awful. They had released Silent Hill 4, I think, at this point.
No, Silent Hill 4 was a lot earlier. And don't mock The Room. The Room is good.
Oh, no.
I think you're thinking of Silent Hill Homecoming?
Yes, Silent Hill 5 Homecoming, which was awful.
Downpour was a little good. It wasn't good, but it was good.
Downpour came after Dead Space, though, and I think that one was decent. But this was at a time where Silent Hill was failing us. Resident Evil was getting way more into action. I was, at the time, I was a huge horror fan I've always been a huge horror video game fan, and I was sort of getting bored with the genre. And Dead Space, like, came in like a brick shit house, and it restored my faith and that games could be scary again.
Well, there's another thing too, is that it was an original IP, and this is a time in which, you know, everything was licensed and still is. You know, it's very hard to find an original IP anymore. I mean, the game that we're all anxiously waiting for is a sequel.
You know what? Actually, Dead Space isn't like Resident Evil. It's exactly like Aliens. The first Alien is great. The second Alien is better.
I don't think
Aliens
it's like
is better.
I mean, if anything, I guess you could call it Alien 3, because there's only one alien in that. And
I'm saying that it's in terms of quality, it follows the same trajectory. Dead Space 1 is great. Dead Space 2 is better. Dead Space 3 is Alien 3.
I liked Alien 3. What are you talking about?
That's a shame.
It's David Fincher. It was. Actually, you know, and a lot of people in other countries actually preferred Alien 3 to the previous two movies. And, I mean, how can you beat Charles S. Dutton? The only problem I had with Alien 3 is that they killed off the two most interesting characters. They killed off the superintendent, and they killed off the doctor, and they left 85. Why? Keep the sarcastic bald prison warden alive, and keep the love interest alive. You know, you already killed off Newton. You already killed off Hicks.
Yeah.
Just keep some people we like. And, you know, I liked Charles S. Dutton in that, you know. But getting back to Dead Space, the problem is, like I said, it got less and less scary, you know. Dead Space 3 is not scary. And Dead Space 3 also introduced co-op, and you can't have a scary game with co-op.
You can, you just, it has to be surprising. And at this point, they were recycling the monsters. Like, they did that for every game. And so, like, there was only, like, Dead Space 2 had a ton of new monsters, and it still was scary for that reason. And even then, the environment was interesting. Dead Space 3, not so much. It's just like a snowy mining colony, and it's the exact same monsters you've fought two times before already.
Yeah, so it's sort of like Nightmare on Elm Street 5. You know, it's like Freddy's coming on and he's cracking jokes.
Yeah, exactly. Once you've seen Freddy, like when you see Freddy for the first time, it's terrifying when he fucking just like sucks little Johnny Depp into the bed and splurts blood all over the ceiling. That's awful. That gave me nightmares for years. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, where he's just like,
really?
That was
I thought it was the death of Tina was scarier.
There was some decent ones throughout, but like the Dead Space, Nightmare on Elm Street.
I actually liked Nightmare on Elm Street 3 Dream Warriors more than anyone. I thought it was a little bit scarier, like when he had hypodermics for fingers and he just jabbed it in and said, "Let's get hard."
Yeah, but I'm talking about the point where they get to where he becomes a Super Freddy and fights that comic book kid by slashing his little.
Oh yeah. No! It's a D&D thing in which he turns into a wizard and says, "Sorry."
Oh no!
Fairy tales.
That's still Nightmare on Elm Street 3. I was talking about Nightmare on Elm Street 5, where he fights the kid who writes comic books.
I don't
books.
Remember anything from 5.
I do, unfortunately.
Actually, I really love New Nightmare.
Is 5 the video game one?
It is.
Okay, yeah, that is the bad one.
Have you seen tremendously off. New Nightmare, the fan film?
No, Wes Craven's New Nightmare. It's not a fan film. It's just as Wes Craven playing himself.
Yeah. Yes, I have seen it.
Heather Langenkamp's playing herself. John Saxon's playing himself. Robert Englund's playing himself. Anyways, this is not the movie. This is not the horror and movie. You know, podcast, the video game podcast. So yeah, I mean, the first Dead Space, and you can get it for $5 now. I think it's also backwards compatible too.
We should taking it back to Dead Space. Dead Space did the exact thing that a lot of horror movie franchises do, and it's just like the producer decided this was good. We want more.
You know, Alien Isolation. I tried to like it, but I mean, if I want to play System Shock 2, I'll play System Shock 2. God damn it. And, you know, I'm still waiting for updates, for more updates from the System Shock 1 Kickstarter. I spent money on that thing, gosh darn it. At least they're moving forward and they decided to ditch the VR. We didn't need VR, we just want System Shock 1.
But no, it was an unfortunate thing with Visceral Games where, like, EA did the thing that every producer does with every successful horror franchise, where it's like, this was great, do a sequel. And they tried and they tried and then they didn't anymore.
John Carpenter used to tried to do with Halloween, like the first two Halloweens, like he was trying to do a different story with each one. He made the mistake of Halloween 2 being about the same night, right? Mm-hmm. Had he went with Season of the Witch with number 2, then he could have had his little anthology series, you know. But nope, it's all about Mike Myers.
Yeah, a few people know that he actually wanted to do that as sort of a Tales from the Crypt thing, but the producers loved Mike Myers so much that they were like, fuck that, bring him back.
Yeah, but
you know how many times that's happened where they introduce a minor villainous character that's only supposed to be temporary and the audience goes gaga for him and then they just go crazy with it full tilt?
Yeah, two words, Hannibal Lecter.
Cough, cough, Boba Fett, cough, cough movie in 2020.
That guy from Hero, Siler, Barnabas Collins from Dark Shadows, Quentin.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Barnabas
Spike
worked
from,
in the series.
Buffy.
Barnabas worked in the
these
series.
These were all supposed to be temporary.
But he was incorporated into the storyline. You know, let me give you an example. Frasier Crane was only supposed to be in 8 episodes of Cheers. but he worked out so well they kept him on after season three. You know, here's the thing. Barnabas Collins became a character in, you know, like any soap opera character.
There's a
difference. It was a soap opera.
Frasier got to stay on the show. He didn't become the focus of Cheers like Barnabas did.
What was the spinoff named again?
The spinoff, yes. After 11 years or 8 years or whatever, then he got his own spinoff.
He was with the rest of the cast, though. I'm just saying, you know, I get what you're saying with Barnabas. But on the other hand, they actually worked him in, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a TV show. Here, I'm willing to give a pass to a TV show a little bit. You know, it's not like a situation with Urkel, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But here's the thing. With Barnabas Collins, it's sort of like, you know what, this storyline is working well, so let's stick with it. You know, and the fact that people like the character, you know. But that, you know, okay, it became a story about Barnabas, but that's because it became a story about Barnabas, you know.
Yeah.
When you have something like Urkel, that's just a catchphrase that you want to use over and over and over again.
Who's your favorite Urkel? Is it nerd Urkel, sexy Urkel, or robot Urkel?
I prefer Sonic the Hedgehog Urkel. For those who don't know, Jaleel White voiced Sonic the Hedgehog in both series, both the good one and the bad one.
Every time you've heard, gotta go fast, chili dogs, yeah! That's Jaleel White.
At least Sonic never talked about cheese. We're going to move on to game news. First news item. Intellivision Amico console revealed with exclusive games coming in 2020. And this comes to us from IGN. And by the way, this was announced 2 hours ago. Or actually 4 hours ago now. Intellivision Entertainment has announced the Intellivision Amico, a family-friendly console with exclusive games. The Intellivision Amico will run somewhere between $150 and $180. And is set to release in North America and Europe in October 10th, 2020. All of its games are rated either E or everyone or E plus 10, positioning itself as a console specifically aimed towards younger gamers and their families. All of its games are downloadable and run between $3 and $8 US, with no high-priced DLC or in-game purchases. It'll launch with some pre-installed Intellivision classics and over 20 games, both reimagined classics and brand new titles, through the Intellivision Online Store. There will also be similar Atari and Imagic classic titles. The games are coming to the Amico feature updated graphics, modernized audio, additional levels, multiplayer modes, local and online, tournament modes, and more. This includes games like Astro Smash, Shark Shark, Baseball, Night Stalker, Skiing, Math Fun, Pong, Asteroids, Centipede, Tempest, Adventure, Missile Command, Swords and Serpents, Minor 2049er, Super Burger Time, Toe Jam and Earl, and more. The technical specs of the hardware haven't been revealed, although it's said to have, quote-unquote, state-of-the-art 21st century 2D image processing and graphics capability, Wi-Fi and Ethernet connectivity, HDMI video output, multiple USB ports, and a system expansion interface. Online functionality for the system includes the Intellivision Online Store, multiplayer, a leaderboard system, and trophy achievement reward system. The two included Bluetooth controllers or throwbacks to the original Intellivision controllers. Throw each features color touch screens, a gyroscope, an accelerometer, force feedback, a speaker, a microphone, and more. So, I just love state-of-the-art 21st century 2D image processing. Okay. I hope that means we're going to play it in 4K.
Isn't it interesting how Intellivision, Tommy Tallarico and Intellivision have moved like in about half the time it took Atari to move with their new console, the VCS.
Well, here's the thing. You know what? You can't have an Atari console out there without Intellivision competing against it. It's just not right.
No, but let's talk about the fact that like it's been about half the time since Atari mobilized and crowdfunded the VCS that we know about the Amico now. From when I first heard about Tommy Tallarico playing with this idea to here we are now.
But here's the thing, it could
Hold on. I'm saying, how crazy is it that in about half the time we already have an idea of what they're going for with this console and what it's supposed to do, whereas we're still guessing with the Atari VCS.
Well, we know it's coming with the Atari VCS. I mean, that information's been out. But here's the thing, you know, when the Atari VCS was announced and it became, you know, got backed in a big way on Kickstarter, that had everybody going, oh, wait a minute, this is going to work. And so, Intellivision, if Atari's doing it, let's do it too, you know? I'm going to tell you, Astro Smash is awesome. You can always have another Tempest game. Missile Command is good. Minor 20 Fighting, that's a game I haven't heard from in a long while. That was, by the way, the first multi-platform game. It was the first game that ever said, oh, we're going to release on every single platform that's available.
Minor 49ers, that to me was the original Mario game, where you're jumping over the little nuggets and you had to complete the floor.
On the ColecoVision it was 11. They had 11 levels. And the baseball, if it's World Series Baseball, a friend of mine is Eddie Dumbrow, who worked on that, which later became Earl Weaver Baseball.
And I'm happy to see that not only are they like taking these old games and rebuilding them from the ground up, but they're also making some new games to go with this. Like, here's, I understand. I understand
though,
they have
like. Doesn't it feel strange
like,
to playing being adventure on a Intellivision title? They are including Atari titles in it. So you have Adventure and Missile Command.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
And Asteroids, for that matter.
That's true. And, like, I'm curious about, like, what the new games they come up with are going to be, if they're going to still be, like, Intellivision-esque, or if they're going to be something altogether different.
You know, I saw Night Stalker for a moment. I thought it was Night Trap. Said, oh no, not a FMV game. Night Stalker, for those who don't know, on the Intellivision was a maze game.
Well, this Intellivision Amico does sound interesting, and they're trying to aim at getting the whole family to play, and that price point is nice.
$150, you know.
That's really good.
And games between $3 and $8, you know. I mean, that, like I said, you know, they get the idea, you know. A lot. What will sell a console sometimes is just the price. I mean, one of the biggest barriers for the Xbox One was released. It was $500, and that turned people off because the PlayStation 4 was $400.
Yeah, and I just gotta say, I applaud Telerico and Intellivision. I mean, like we know, like this is much more information than I was expecting to get at this point about this system. I thought like we were still gonna be waiting a long time to figure out what it does, just like the VCS, but. Here we are. It's kind of like short of putting the physical model together and demonstrating it at shows, they're well on their way, and that's good.
You know what's interesting is that they're releasing Swords and Serpents. I don't know if you know that game. It was an NES game, which was basically both top-down and first-person.
Nice.
Just do a Google search for Sword and Serpents. It's a really interesting game. It's like they took Dungeon Master and they took Gauntlet and they smushed them together.
Interesting.
So yeah,
I like
they have
both
a Nintendo
those
Entertainment
things.
System game on there too.
I do like both of those things.
Of course, it wasn't Nintendo. It was Interplay who made the game, but still. I mean, you know, you can't have too much Tempest though. Tempest holds up. When did it first come out? Like 1988, 1987?
I feel like they just put out like a new Tempest a little bit ago.
Yeah, there is a new Tempest that's coming out, but it's still just Tempest. I mean, even Space Giraffe was Tempest. I mean, he keeps coming out with the same game over and over and over again. He has one game in his system. That's all he has. He's a loon too, you know, but...
Alrighty.
You don't know.
It looks cool.
Oh, did you see the pictures of the Intellivision?
Yes, it looks very nice and sleek. It kind of looks like Apple's kind of design.
Yeah, it looks like a small box. I think it's I mean, what I'm interested in hearing is how much hard drive space it's going to have.
The controllers kind of look like Generation 1 iPods, and that's kind of amusing.
Actually, you know what? I'm wondering if they're gonna do streaming, if they're gonna stream games.
And I know. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying because I know that there's gonna be 20 games that are gonna be on the ROM itself. It's gonna be permanently on the system. But I'm willing to bet you they could do streaming games on that.
Huh. It'd be fun.
What were you about to say?
I was gonna say I know that the controller aesthetic is supposed to like match that original where you had like the number pad and the circle dial, but the way they did it with the little color screen on the controller, that's what makes it look like it's just like a straight up Generation 1 iPod that you play television
Dreamcast,
games.
The Dreamcast had a little screen on it. It wasn't a touch screen, but it was still there.
They look exactly like us. Like I had an off-brand iPod when I was younger called Sansa, like the Sansa Media players. Oh, and it looked like that, where it was like just like a little circle that you could spin and press in the middle and press on the sides to do stuff. And I don't know. There's something really funny about that to me.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway, the new Tempest that's coming out is called Tempest 4000, and it's going to be on the Atari VCS. So it makes me wonder if they're also going to bring it to the Intellivision.
Oh, I would imagine.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott. Scott?
Yes?
It's your turn.
Okay, Jay Raymond leaves Electronic Arts. This is from PC Gamer. Jay Raymond, who joined Electronic Arts in 2015 to form the EA Motive Studio, has left the company. EA confirmed Raymond's departure in a statement indicating that she had been replaced at the head of Motive by Senior Vice President Samantha Ryan, who was also responsible for EA Mobile, Maxis, and BioWare. Chief Studios Officer Laura Milley and her team have taken several steps internally to better support our games makers in this pursuit, such as expanding Samantha Ryan's portfolio to lead additional studios, including Motive EA said. Samantha is known for driving creative design and supporting game teams so they can bring in their visions to life. She is deeply experienced game maker with gameography that spans from The Sims to Batman Arkham City to No One Lives Forever to the highly anticipated Anthem. With this change, Jade Raymond has decided to leave Electronic Arts. In her time with us, Jade helped to build great teams, and our projects underway at Motive and other studios continue unchanged. We're appreciative of all of her efforts, and we wish Jade all the best as she moves on to her next adventure. Raymond previously served as producer or managing director on high-profile Ubisoft games, including Assassin's Creed, Splinter Cell Blacklist, and Far Cry 4. And her move to EA was greatly hyped. Vice President Patrick Söderlund said a few months after her arrival that the company wanted to make gigantic action games like those Ubisoft is known for, and that was reportedly what she was up to, with both new properties and at least one Star Wars game being developed in partnership with Amy Hennig's Visceral Games. But EA closed Visceral in October 2017, indicated earlier this year that it was having second thoughts about story-based linear games in general.
Yeah, the game with Visceral was supposed to be Star Wars 1313.
Right.
And all Motive did was help out with Star Wars Battlefront 2. That's it. The company did nothing. Unfortunately.
How can they produce nothing all that time? They need to produce something.
They produced nothing. They helped out with one game, and the developer they were working with on a different game was shuttered, and they had nothing to do.
Yeah. So it's a lot of things where they were working with other people on their projects, and some of those projects didn't come out.
Just one project. I mean,
I don't know. who was to blame? Motive for not doing initiative, or EA for not managing?
Jade left, and I think it's out of frustration.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I can think of. You know, this entire thing with EA went nowhere.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. EA is kind of the worst ones when it comes to buying up things
They didn't buy up anything here. They just hired somebody and told her to head Motive, you know, and that did not work out. I mean, I think when Visceral was shuttered, it just ruined all of their plans. And then EA had to decide, you know what, we're not going to make any single player games anymore.
Yeah. Which, like,
story-based linear games. I mean, I guess they want sandbox games because they're easy to make.
I was actually looking forward to a single-player, first-person Star Wars game like they used to make, but I guess not.
I still have Dark Forces. Have it in
Dark Forces is so good. I was just thinking about that game.
It was you know what was special about that game? You actually had mouse luck.
I like the Jedi Outcast game. That was good.
I was friends with the head of Raven Software, so I got to play all of the Jedi Knight games.
Star Wars games used to be good and constant.
Well, here's the thing. That's when LucasArts was shuttered, and they said, here, you can have all of it, and gave it to other people.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never have TIE Fighter versus X-Wing anymore.
Nope. Or Rogue Squadron. That was good, too.
I never played it.
Oh, you missed out.
I also did not play the Phantom Menace games. Pod Racer. What was the other one? Pod Racer and...
You didn't miss out so much there.
What?
You didn't miss out so much there.
Well, I mean, I like racing games. As a matter of fact, you know, Forza Horizon 4 is getting so much praise. I mean, people are just raving about it. I have to try it out at some point.
Pod racing game was not that great as far as the racers go. It was a little too fast for its own good, if I remember right, and so you would crash easily into everything.
It's a shame because, you know, a racing game set in the Star Wars universe should work.
Absolutely it should, but they just, eh.
Anyways, we're going to move on to some depressing news. Go ahead, TJ.
Splash Damage ends development of its team-based shooter, Dirty Bomb. Oh, that's surprising. I didn't know that. Developer Splash Damage will no longer update its team-based shooter, Dirty Bomb, it has announced. The bottom line is that we just can't justify continuing to work on the game we love, it said in a post on the game's official website, adding that it was not able to make Dirty Bomb the success that we hoped it would be. The shooter entered open beta way back in 2015, but its 1.0 version only came out in August. It was, by all accounts, a fun, fast-paced shooter with elements from Team Fortress 2, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, and Battlefield. At the time, it was pulling 13,000 concurrent players, whereas now, according to Steam Spy, it barely reaches a peak of 1,000 a day. As we know, Steam Spy is no longer the most accurate yardstick, but it gives you a rough idea of the change. Splash Damage will release a couple bug fix builds in the coming weeks as planned, and will continue to keep official servers open as long as player count supports it. It won't get around to releasing all the mercenaries it had planned, which means anyone who bought the All Mercs Pack DLC will be refunded. The money should automatically go into your Steam wallet. Free mercenary rotations will continue, and the game will still hold simple events like weekend login bonuses. So, that is indeed a bummer, because I had heard from a lot of people that that Dirty Bomb was about as close as we would get to a decent competitor for Overwatch.
Also, you know, I actually enjoyed the PC version of Brink. I know a lot of people didn't like it, but I did. But, you know, they're doing it the right way. I mean, they're keeping the servers open if people still want to play. I mean, it's not... although, I'm thinking Microsoft did it so that they were holding open the old Xbox Live for 4 people playing Halo 2. And they only shut it down when there's only one person left, because how can you have a server just for one person? You know, and refunding people who bought the DLC pack, that's nice. Also, you know, I mean, at least you can say, you know, they're going to keep it open for as long as people want to play it.
That's a shame. That's a shame to see it come to an end for that one, because, like I said, I hadn't played it myself.
See, then there's a problem right away. You didn't play it, so.
they never hooked me. And besides, my life is ridiculously busy. I only have time for so many games.
Well, for those who don't know who Splash Damage is, they're the ones who made the famous Quake mod. What was the name of that Quake mod? Oh, Quake Wars, Enemy Territory.
Yeah.
And it was a smash success. And it was way back in 2003. So they said, you know what, they first made it for Wolfenstein, then they made it for Quake. Said, you know what, we're going to make Brink, you know, and I enjoyed Brink a lot, you know, on PC. I heard it really was bad on console. They also were the ones who worked on the Batman Arkham Origins multiplayer. They also worked on Gears of War multiplayer too, by the way.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, like, splash damage knows their way around a game. I have no doubt about that, except for the ones where they kind of blew it. But
well, here's the thing. They're most famous for their mods and for their contributions. They haven't really succeeded in making a game that's all them, you know. The entire game is them. They're good at making multiplayer modes for Gears of War and Gears of War 4. They're good at making multiplayer for Batman Arkham Origins. They're good for making mods for Quake and Wolfenstein. But Brink just basically failed, you know, and Dirty Bomb was their attempt. It was basically Brink 2.
Hmm. Yeah, well, I don't know. Like, Brink was a bad time. I'm sorry, it's true. I wanted that game to be good so badly.
And did you play the PC version is the question?
Nope, I played the Xbox 360 version.
That's the problem right there. People actually like the PC version of Brink.
I can imagine they probably did, but it's just, I don't know. There wasn't enough to that game for me.
Yeah, you know, and you're right that it's bad timing, because Dirty Bomb is a really, really good game. I mean, they took everything that people didn't like about Brink and they changed it. Unfortunately, there's a couple of behemoths out there. I mean, Cliffy B's Lawbreakers couldn't cut it. Paladin went down. What other games have fallen in, you know? 2K couldn't have their multiplayer shooter. What do they call it again? A class-based multiplayer shooter?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's only two of them, and otherwise PUBG and Fortnite are hogging all the other space for people's attention. I mean, you have to do what the guys who are doing with the Darwin Project are doing. They're going small. You know, they know we're never gonna get PUBG and Fortnite numbers, even though we came up with the Battle Royale concept first of all these people. So we're just going to keep it nice and small, you know.
The only people that seem to be doing okay as far as, like, a Overwatch-like game is Quake Champions. And that's because it's not...
It's Quake! What are you talking...
Yeah.
You slap Quake on the name, of course they're going to... You know what? Actually, maybe Splash Damage should go to id, go to Bethesda and say, hey, let's make enemy territory Quake War standalone. Make it a free-to-play game.
Let us make a mode for your Quake game.
No. Let's make a free to play game. Enemy territory. Well, Quake Champions is free to play. I'm just saying, make enemy territory Quake Wars its own separate game. You know, and have a ton of hats that you can put with the game.
I mean, maybe. I think that there's definitely places for Splash Damage to go, and I hope they find their footing with something new. It's just that, like, it's really hard to, if Splash Damage can't make it work alongside Overwatch, then I'm not sure that anyone short of, like, a super massive publisher can make it work. And even then, Gearbox and 2K couldn't make it work with Battleborn, so, like...
Well, you want to know something about Splash Damage that you never hear about? And that is, Splash Damage is a very well-run company. They don't overwork people. They don't, you know, they have no sign, you know, because I know some of the guys from the company. I know that it's a very good place to work, you know, and that's going to bear out. I mean, they just say, okay, Dirty Bomb fail, let's try something new. I mean, what they're probably going to do is they're going to probably go to a big company and say, hey, do you want us to do a multiplayer mode for you?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, they did it for Gears of War 4, for crying out loud. They went up to Microsoft. Can we do your multiplayer? Microsoft said, sure.
Yeah. Who knows? Like, they're clearly capable of making their own good games. It's just a matter of, are they willing to spend the money on another project?
Yeah. Or, you know, here's the thing. You know, whatever you make, it's out there. That's your resume. Even if people aren't playing Dirty Bomb, other companies are going to look at Dirty Bomb and say, hey, you know, they really did a good job of that. I wonder if they could do this for our game.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say what happens when, like, you know, especially after a quote-unquote failure. I'm not gonna call Dirty Bomb a failure, but like for all intents and purposes,
they wouldn't be making their own game. They would be helping someone else make their own game, unless you're willing to call Gears of War 4 a failure.
No, I guess that's true.
I mean, if you have them attached, they're good workers. If you have them attached to a game, you know, hire them as contractors to work on your multiplayer and make your multiplayer interesting. So we'll see. I mean, I don't know if they're gonna make their own game anytime soon. I think they may just take a step back, and they'll just, you know, look to see if there's anybody else who needs help with it before they start up again. Whatever. I hope they remain. Like I said, Dirty Bomb. You know what? Here's the thing. Dirty Bomb is free to play. Go ahead and check it out.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to. I mean, unless you're the busiest person on earth, like TJ here, who's going to all these tournaments.
Well, maybe Epic should hire him on again to help with their next project they can't get done.
Like Rage 2?
Now, Epic, that's Bethesda.
Oh. Well, maybe they can talk to Cliffy B and say, hey, let's make Lawbreakers 2.
This time without the snark.
This time we're not going to insult the fans.
I don't think Cliffy B is coming back to games anytime soon.
He just came back. He's gone into retirement twice, and he said, oh, you know what? I was just kidding. I'm back.
I thought he was writing his memoirs or something right now.
Yeah. I mean, that made me think of Chris Avalon, and makes me think of the next zombie game. Dying Light 2.
Huh.
I'm really looking forward to that. That's a complete non sequitur. But we're going to talk about the game that killed Dirty Bomb now. Fortnite Save the World mode won't be going to free-to-play in 2018. This comes from US Gamer. Today, Epic released an update on Fortnite Save the World mode. Originally intended to go free at some point this year, the change of price point has now been postponed. The delay was announced over on the official Epic website. Scaling up for the legions of player heroes who will be joining the fight is key to providing an excellent experience. This applies to all of our players, old and new, so we're taking the time to get this right, said the announcement. For those of you who want to start playing right now, we've got you. Starting next week, we'll be hosting a 50% off sale for the standard, deluxe, and super deluxe and limited founders packs. Elsewhere, Epic is hauling the UI system for the co-op mode. You know, TJ, you already paid for this. Yes. You paid for it already.
No, it was given to me. I didn't spend a single dollar on Fortnite.
I thought you did pay for it to be in the beta.
No, I was offered one of the founders packs to review it.
Oh, okay. You'll have a total of 6 hero slots to manage from the previous 3, first choosing a main hero to command up to 5 additional, which will determine your perks and traits, Epic revealed. We're looking to expand the variety of loadouts you can create, putting in the tools in your hands to make meaningful new decisions. Over on the Battle Royale side of things, Season 6 is still rolling on. So, you're the person to go to all things Fortnite. Tell us about Save the Mode, or Save the World.
It's PvE in Fortnite. This is basically the way the game started, is what Save the World mode is called now, where you fight zombies, do missions, co-op with other people or solo, and build your towers and whatnot. I can see why they're holding off on it. It's because they've got bigger fish to fry. They have a $1 billion industry over in Battle Royale.
You know, there is no such thing as too big to fail.
But like, there's no reason to rush putting out that. I don't think people are chomping at the bit and screaming at Epic to be like, "Give me that PvE mode." I just don't think people care as much as
I care. I don't like PvP that much. I like PvE. And, you know, that's the thing that sold me on Fortnite in the first place was, you know, the original, back in 2014, 2013, when they were pimping Fortnite as the first Unreal Engine 4 game, they showed these people building their little fort and fighting off creatures invading it.
Yeah. And it's not that I don't think people don't care. It's that I don't think they care even a noticeable percentage or decimal as much as the rest of the world cares about Battle Royale and tells them about it.
You know, the problem with this right now is that people don't know what they want. Right now, if you ask people what they want, they would say, we want a hero-based shooter, because that's what's hot right now.
Maybe.
That's why they backed Mighty Number 9, because that's what they want. We want Mega Man again. That's why they backed, you know, it's like, people don't know what they want. You know, all these Kickstarters for these older games that they're going to make updates to, whatever. That doesn't interest me. I want new stuff.
Yeah, and eventually they will put out this. Eventually they will make Fortnite Save the World free to play, but I just don't think that, like, it is definitely not a priority for Epic Games to put this out. I'll put it that way.
Here's a question for you. Do you want to play another Ubisoft open world game?
I haven't played one since...
Yeah, that's what's going to happen to hero-based shooters.
I haven't played one since Assassin's Creed Revelations.
I'm saying that's what's going to happen to open-world shooters.
Yeah, I can see that. The only... the ones that have taken hold are going to stick around and stay for a long, 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 long time. The same way that Team Fortress did before them, and then there's going to be one that strikes fire later on that does that outdoes these. We all thought that World of Warcraft was going to take over the world and never go away, and now people are like, "Man, World of Warcraft now sucks. I wish it was like it was
there's
when
still
it was 7
million
original."
People subscribers though, not the
yeah,
14
I know.
Million there were, but
I know. But back in the day, you couldn't turn on the TV without seeing a World of Warcraft commercial.
You know what? I want to go back into World of Warcraft just to see. It's sort of like going back to someplace you haven't been in years, just to see what it's like, because I know they changed the entire perk system. My carefully planned Drenae priest is going to be all screwed up now.
Yeah, so
you can always respect the priest.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure they're going to allow me to do it for free, but it's sort of like, you know, I had the way I wanted it. You know, now it's just broad strokes.
Mm-hmm. Respect yourself.
But, you know, I know what kind of games I want, and everybody wants their own kind of games. I mean, there are people that do seem to be fashion followers who just follow whatever the latest trend is or whatever's hot.
It isn't the trend, but it's sort of like they just want what they know. How do you know what you want if you don't experience it? You know, you got to experiment at some point, you know.
Yeah, and some people have, like myself, and got bored with shooters and found games that weren't boring to me, and you know, those are like RPGs.
You know, here's the thing. You know, that's the main reason why I played Blue Dragon, because mm-hmm. it was new. It was the archetypal stereotype JRPG. I mean, you couldn't get any more JRPG, and that's why I got it. And I tried, you know, Tales of Vesperia was eh. I tried Lost Odyssey. Eh. The problems I had with those games, by the way, was the grinding, and that you can't pass this boss without grinding about 50 hours just to pass that one boss. That's not how I operate.
Well, Lost Odyssey, for me, I didn't get into it because, like, you spend 5 or 10 minutes just watching this awesome epic battle and no idea about the character, and I just didn't care. And I was like,
oh my
God, I'm
bored.
The best
part of that game was the text. I mean, talking about his past lives. Really depressing stuff. I mean, in a good way. I also liked Eternal Sonata, but then again, that was because it was depressing, and I liked it. Like the depressingness
of Eternal
Sonata
because it had a different game mechanic, battle mechanic. It was you can move around during the battle and select what actions to take, and I really liked it. It just felt a little bit more freeform and still a little bit turn based at the same time.
Yeah. For me, that was Star Ocean, and I thought I liked those games a lot, but by the time I got to the third one, I just didn't care as much anymore, and I don't know why.
That sounds
I guess
like
I just
in Dead Space.
Yeah.
Actually, that's exactly what happened with me in Assassin's Creed. When I... what was the one that was just after 4? Because 4 started me not caring. Because, yeah, well, the ship was great and all that stuff. It wasn't Assassin's Creed anymore, you know? And when I reached the next one, it wasn't Unity. It's just like, no, I'm done. I don't care about Assassin's Creed anymore.
Was that Syndicate, the one in England?
No, Syndicate came after Unity, because I remember because people were talking about Syndicate and saying, is it going to be a big, buggy mess of shit like Unity was? I think it was Unity because that was the one after the pirates, then you got the French Revolution.
Mm-hmm. I think that's how I feel about Final Fantasy. I'm done.
I know you'll never be done with Fallout. Oh, you were done with Fallout, actually. Fallout 4 broke you.
Yeah, but I am looking forward to the next Elder Scrolls, so there is that.
But yeah, when it comes to the, like, there's a reason Fortnite is and World of Warcraft have been the most popular games in the world at some time or another. They're good at their foundation, but they're also modular to the point where they can just shove things into those games at any given point, whether it's like an entire new piece of content or just like a weapon. And it makes things that much different.
I remember it's sort of like I had the friend, right? And he was playing Civilization. I'd never heard of it before. And I said, it's really popular, really? And then I went and played it and said, oh, that's why it's really popular. And I got hooked. See, that's what I mean by you have to try stuff you've never tried before.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm just talking to why games like World of Warcraft and Fortnite have become as popular as they have.
Oh, well, here's the thing. Well, I can't say with World of Warcraft, but I will say it with Warcraft, I think it was the first one, Orcs and Humans. I heard it was really popular. I said, okay. And then I tried and said, oh, that's why it's really popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't give two fucks about an RTS.
Right.
And Warcraft said, oh, try me. I said, oh, so that's what it can be like.
Now take that.
The genre is good.
Now take that and make it free to play and then make it like something where you can update it literally on a weekly basis.
Or like and Paul bemoaned last week, just make Warcraft 4, damn it.
Well, I mean, like, no, those games aren't the same as World of Warcraft or Fortnite. Fortnite and World of Warcraft exist in a thing all their own, where they have that perfect level of accessibility mixed with Sony did it first with Mag.
What are you talking about?
Mixed with the modular factor, and basically you have a game that is never old, and it's super easy to just jump into at any given point and spend hours on.
I know they'd rather do new expansions, but just do World of Warcraft 2. Just reset the hell damn thing. You'd get more people interested that way.
World of Warcraft is never going to be as big as it was.
No, but if you release a World of Warcraft 2, which has new mechanics and, you know, a new story, you know, not just endlessly adding Kung Fu Panda to your game. just restart it and do something new. By the way, this all ties into the question of the week. I didn't know we were going to go in this direction, but we are going in this direction. So, which canceled game do you wish had been completed? And I give a couple examples, like Fallout Ghost, Fallout 3, the new Van Buren version. I think that's Scott's answer already. Warcraft Adventures, Scalebound, Fez 2, Prey 2, Flash, the Fastest Man Alive, Full Throttle 2, or something else?
I would like to say Baldur's Gate Black Hound, or Baldur's Gate 3 Black Hound. All I ever got to see was an image of like an elven-looking town with some forest and mist, and that was it. unfortunately, the game never saw a light of day. And the Fallout 3 Van Buren is also definitely on there too. That's a real missed opportunity and a shame. We'll never see those games.
Yeah, that was the Jefferson Engine game. That was the sequel to the Infinity Engine, which the first two Baldur's Gates ran on. But guess what? They are working on a Baldur's Gate 3. We just don't know what it is. But it's going to be done by the guys who did the remakes of Baldur's Gate and Baldur's Gate 2.
Beamdog?
Yep.
Okay.
It's in the works. There's nothing about it. It's just that there's a Baldur's Gate 3 coming, and we don't know anything about it yet.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, you know what I'd like to see on that note? I'd like to... You know what they cannot re-release? And that's Icewind Dale 2. Because no one can find the codes for it.
Yeah. The original base code of it is gone. It just got lost. It probably got deleted off of a hard drive somewhere. And
for those who say, well, they're selling it, can't they reverse engineer it? No, you can't reverse engineer it. It doesn't work that way.
They would probably make a new engine anyhow, but
yeah, but it wouldn't be the original game. See, it would be
no,
it would be remastered or whatever. No, we're talking about the original game being
right.
The amount at which you'd have to deconstruct a game like Icewind Dale in order to find the foundation would be so much effort and time that I don't think anyone cares that much.
Nah.
You'd be surprised. I'm pretty sure somewhere out there there's a group of fans who will work 10 years just doing that. I mean, we have people recreating Morrowind in the Skyrim engine, for crying out loud.
That's true. And oh, that's right. Somebody, I think you posted it, Jonah, that somebody had done Fallout New Vegas in the Fallout 4 engine.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
And these are all labels of love. People are,
you know,
I'm not going to say they don't have a life. It's just that what they want, what they find
this
fun
is their hobby.
Is remaking it.
This is what they want to do.
It's their hobby.
Nothing wrong with that.
I just think deconstructing code like that is an altogether different process.
That's a different beast. Yeah.
That even the most diehard fan would eventually become frustrated.
But here's the thing.
Yeah.
I've learned never to consider anybody not willing to do the most menial tasks ever. I mean, you have farming simulators, for crying out loud.
Yeah. you have Alaskan Truck Simulator.
At least there's an element of danger in that.
yeah.
No, even more, you know, you have House Flipper as one of the top games in Steam right now. House Flipper.
Wow.
Anyway.
Yeah, but I can see why with that, because it's sort of like Sims, but without people.
Yeah. It's like a puzzle version of The Sims. It's like, here, fix these the problems in this house.
Fix this crappy house that The Sims creator destroyed.
Yeah. So you can see an element of puzzling and 3D world construction. So, yeah, you could see that being a good game, or at least interesting.
On the flip side, I would love to play a mod of House Flipper where somebody, made it like completely sim scenarios where you have to hammer down a wall and then a body falls out of it because the Sims creator walled somebody in.
Yes.
You know, that reminds me of SimCopter, in which you could import your Sim City and also Streets of Sim City. Those two games allow you to import your Sim City into the game.
Oh, well, that would be awesome.
Well, you know, that's actually what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Streets of Sim City was awful. At least you got to drive through your own city, though. As much as I wanted to see The Flash, The Fastest Man Alive, and Full Throttle 2, and Warcraft Adventures, which, by the way, had a huge effect on World of Warcraft, because all the stuff that was in that game became the backstory for World of Warcraft. I have to say StarCraft Ghost, because here's the thing. I really loved playing Command & Conquer Renegade, in which you were one person running through an RTS. That's basically what you were doing. If you ever played Command & Conquer, basically what you were one, this one little person in the middle of it, and all the stuff that happens in the RTS is going on, but you're in the middle of it at that level, at street level. You know, and the multiplayer was basically playing Command & Conquer, but you're actually on the ground.
That did sound cool. I think that got canceled, though, right?
No, it wasn't canceled, but StarCraft Ghost was canceled. And that was basically the same concept, in which you're playing a ghost from StarCraft in the middle of the StarCraft world.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I meant that got canceled.
Yeah. What's irritating is that, and we could do a gaming history on this, it was actually canceled one month after E3, where it was featured.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was first shown at the Tokyo Game Show. Everybody loved it. And then a couple of months later, they showed it at E3, and then they had to cancel it, and a lot of stuff was going on. They kept on switching developers. You know, it was dead, then reborn several times. And it's just like, it's a sad story. I mean, Polygon recently, like 2 years ago, did an article about it. I also wish Prey 2 had come out. For those of you who don't know, the Prey that was released, that has nothing to do with the first Prey. The Prey 2 is going to be sort of like Blade Runner in space, in which the Native American character that you starred as was now a bounty hunter on a space station. And all the aliens had their own personalities. So how about you, DJ? Is there a game that was canceled that you really wanted to play?
Yeah, easily. Silent Hills.
Are you sure you don't mean PT?
I mean Silent Hills. I mean what PT would have eventually become. Just because, like, you know what? I like the idea of what Hideo Kojima is coming up with those same exact people. Mm. But at the same time, having the lore of Silent Hill and then putting that into the director chair with Hideo Kojima, giving it to the writer that is Guillermo del Toro, and then having the acting pedigree of Mads Mikkelsen and
Guillermo del Toro is the death knell for any game. Just ask Insane.
Oh, I know, and he knows it too. He's tried 3 times, isn't it? Or at this point, 4 times?
I don't know. He's just a death knell for any game that he comes across. And frankly, you know, him stepping away from The Hobbit just killed that too. They may have released Hobbit movies, but they shouldn't have. And then I didn't need to see Legolas playing Super Mario Brothers.
But yeah, between like Norman Reedus, Mads Mikkelsen, Guillermo del Toro, and Hideo Kojima, I would have loved to see what Silent Hills could have become.
I think it would have become an Elvira game.
I feel like where Silent Hill Downpour was sort of a step back on the right track, Silent Hills would have been like the reinvigoration of that entire series. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out, and they had to cut it loose, and Hideo Kojima had to walk, and everybody walked with him, and that's...
What if you just remake Silent Hill 2?
That would be cool.
From the ground up.
I would want the... you know, it's just that, at this point, I don't think that Konami has the...
Oh, no, forget Konami, they're not going to do it. I mean, just, what if somebody does it? Someone buy the IP from them.
I would love for...
Konami only cares about pachinko machines.
I would love for talent to come back to Konami in the way that it has come back to Capcom with the Resident Evil series. Because Resident Evil 2 is everything done right.
You mean the
so
remastered
far.
One?
Yeah, is Resident Evil 2 remastered, or remake, is... from the ground up looking like everything that should be right about that game. The monsters look horrifying again. The environments look difficult and puzzling. The weapons look good. The effects look good. It's and like the story looks good, and it's everything. Like you can feel the passion when you look at a trailer for a Resident Evil 2 remake. These people grew up playing that game, or they were involved in that game when it was being made. They know how it works, and they're making it work better.
Yeah, they recently released some new videos too.
And
yesterday,
I kind of wish that would happen to Silent Hills or Silent Hill. I wish it would have happened to Silent Hills. I wish, because those people seem to care about it too. And I just don't think that Konami has the talent anymore to make that happen.
What PT did was it made Resident Evil 7. That's basically what it did. People saw, that's what people want now. So they said, we're going to make Resident Evil 7 just like that.
Except Resident Evil 7 really isn't like that.
No,
it's first
but
person.
They took the same cues, though.
You know, it's first person, yes.
I mean, in terms of... What was Resident Evil 6? It was... one part of it was actually Call of Duty. And they said they wanted to make that part of the game Call of Duty. The next... Another part was basically Uncharted, with a Nathan Drake character. You know, they were making a big-budget action film, and what people really wanted was a creepy old house.
They wanted a creepy, claustrophobic scenario in which you don't have a million bullets and you don't have superior firepower at all times, in which you don't have a partner standing right next to you that will help you every step of the way.
And also, well, the thing about Resident Evil 5 was her problem was that you only had a little bit of health and she would come running at you with a full potion, you know, with a full thing that normally would heal your entire thing. No, 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 no. And you're running away from her, telling her, I don't want to be healed. Damn it. Stay away from me. Don't waste my healing on me right now.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, Resident Evil 7 was back to basics. You're in a mansion. There is murderous things about... You gotta go find yourself some key items and unlock some doors and not get murdered in the process.
Yeah. I don't know.
And Resident Evil 2 Remake is looking like that too. So
I know, but sometimes things don't have to be serious. I mean, the last thing I want is a serious Lara Croft. I mean, I don't need Grim Determination from Lara Croft. What I want is Bayonetta from Lara Croft. Just come at me, bro. I'm gonna shoot up your tiger.
Akimbo pistols, big boobed Lara Croft.
No, it doesn't have to be big boob. What's it called? But you know, I want her to be less serious. You know, because here's the problem with Lara Croft. She has no agency in anything she does. Everything happens to her. You know? She never actually does things. She says, I gotta do it. No. I want her to say, I'm going to do this. Because I want to.
I mean, for lack of better terms, she was pretty much a solo Charlie's Angel for the better part of the year.
I'd rather have her closer in personality to Bayonetta than, I mean, she can be well. Her personality in the original games was an upper class asshole. Actually, no, she locked her fucking butler in the freezer for crying out loud.
Now, hold on, you did that. That's because you could.
I didn't do it personally, but I know that you could do that. As a matter of fact, that's by the way. Here's the thing. Wait. It's actually in canon because. In the most recent game, the butler talks about that. Talks about her locking him in the closet. But he explains it as, you know, her father had died and she was acting out, you know.
I think it's funny that they made that into a thing.
She's also shooting endangered wildlife.
Well, she's also almost being mauled by it, so...
No, she's not being it's just walking around and if she gets too close, then it'll attack. You just stay clear of it. You don't have to shoot the endangered Bengal tiger. I mean, she can shoot all the T-Rexes she wants, although she can't. that's what Tomb Raider needs more of. It needs more T-Rexes, damn it.
Huh.
That's my campaign logo now. More T-Rexes. Anyways, so so let's recap right now. I said StarCraft Ghost. What did you say? You said Baldur's Gate 3, Scott.
Yes.
And TJ said he just wants Silent Hills back.
I want a good Silent Hill. I want a Silent Hill that people care, the people that are making it care about again.
No, but you have to say a specific game, and that's Silent Hills. Which actually sounds more like a porno title to me, too.
Silent Hills? I don't know.
I want you to check out my Silent Hills. There's a secret garden nearby. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us an iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
I'm Matt Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week. Hopefully we won't talk about Silent Hills anymore. Watch, there's news about Silent Hills. They're bringing it back.
as a pachinko machine.
If that were true, TJ would skip the podcast. He would just be out in the streets cheering.
It would be the groan heard around the world.
Yes, it's being done by Peter Molyneux. That's the game I really wish had been released. The Fable 1 that they had actually intended. If you plant it in acorn, by the end of the game, it'll grow into a tree. Actually, according to Peter, they did code that in, but it took up so much. It took up 15% of the game's programming space or, you know, memory and stuff like that. They couldn't use it. You know, that's what happens when you overreach. Anyways. We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.